It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
All right. Can't bring the sharp instruments back yet. Keep them hidden. Still a lot of Blue Jay fans in great distress. I'm Bob McCowan. That is Damian Cox to my immediate left. Glenn Healy joins us in a little while. Dan Shulman, Richard Deitch, Don Banks as well. But in studio, I didn't read my own lineup. I knew you were coming on, but I didn't know you were in studio. Buck Martinez is with us. Hello, Bucko.
Good afternoon, man. How are we doing?
All of a sudden, he has time. He's got all kinds of time to come and hang with us.
Well, I have a little time. I'm actually going to the World Series. I'm going to work that. So,
are you? Yeah. Who are you working for?
MLB International.
Oh, are you? Are you doing color? A play-by-play?
Color?
What nice. Language?
I'm going to try American English and try to do that. I'm trying to do some English. Yeah, I'm working with Matt Vasgersian, so that's we'll be on the Sportsnet.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. You'll be on Sportsnet?
Yeah.
Great. So we'll get to hear you again.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Looking forward to it.
Want to guess? Who's it going to be? Cleveland. I think Cleveland's probably
in it. Cleveland's probably going to be in it. Yeah, we had plans that it was going to be the Blue Jays, and that's why was so interesting and exciting for me. But, yeah, Cleveland's going to be in it. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I don't have a feel for this one yet.
No.
I'm not dismissing the Dodgers at all.
No. Dodgers have a lot of heart. And, you know, of course, they got that big weapon, that left-handed kid that pitches pretty good. He's going to be good when he grows up.
Yeah, he's going to go game six.
Yeah.
And then Hill, projectedly, in Game 7.
Yeah, and you know what? Hill's had a great year.
He's been good.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It should be a real good World Series.
One of my fondest World Series was the one where Hershiser pitched like every other day.
Yeah, he pitched like four games out of the seven?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if Kershaw came out of the bullpen again in Game 7.
You know what? And everybody talks about Andrew Miller. Well, you know what? Goose, Eckersley, Fingers, they all used to do that during the regular season.
Yeah.
Come in the sixth and pitch the rest of the game.
Yeah. Now, granted, that was before the philosophy of you have a closer and he only is the closer kicked in.
They were closers. They just started closing a little earlier than everybody else.
I get that. But you know philosophies do ebb and flow in baseball.
Yes. And you know what? Baseball is a copycat sport. There's no question about it. So everybody's going to look for the next Andrew Miller, which doesn't come along.
How do you find that guy?
No, you don't. I tell you what, he did a heck of a job of refining his delivery. Not only was he throwing a wipeout slider, he threw it whenever he wanted to for strikes. And
that
I think the
was
thing
it. That,
that makes him so tough to hit, there's no timing mechanism. There's no arm swing. Right. He just goes from a set position and throws it. So hitters don't have a chance to go back. They don't have a chance to get any timing on him. I think that's what's made the biggest difference of all. And when you remember, he threw Donaldson two fastballs down and away in Cleveland. Boom, boom. Strike one, strike two. And then threw him the best slider he's thrown all the year. And it was this big, and there was no chance.
There was no chance.
Mm-hmm. No.
The thing that impressed me the most, he threw strikes all the time.
All the
time. With all pitches.
Everything was a strike.
And secondly, he backdoored all the right-handed hitters with that slider.
Yeah.
Everything started a foot outside the plate and caught the outside
that
corner.
Was the game plan for the Blue Jay hitters.
Pitch them away.
The Blue Jay hitters, they wanted him to pitch away, but it started so far away that it looked unhittable.
Yeah.
You know, and Brooke Jacoby told me, he said, if you chase that ball that's inside, it's going to hit your back foot and you got no chance. You have to push him out over the plate. But it started so far out over the plate that they saw it, okay, that's the one I want, and then there's no way that can break over the strike zone, but it did.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew Miller wasn't even Andrew Miller last year, was he?
He was pretty good.
He's not this good. He's as good as anybody we've seen in postseason. Put him right there with Mariano, the way he's just, it's no chance. You have no chance. And JD did a great job because he knew he was going to get a fastball on the first pitch. He hit it hard, but unfortunately, he had to ride it to shortstop.
Yeah. We could spend a lot of time going over this year and what happened and why it happened, but I think we're all basically in concurrence with with the situation. The starting pitching was nearly perfect. The bullpen was, by the end of the year, really good. And this team was unable to repeat their performance of last year, where the power hitters, one after another, would bang them off over the walls. They got, forget that they out-hit the Cleveland Indians 32-25 in this series.
Yeah.
They got out-homered by the Cleveland Indians 6-2. And that all being said, I'd rather spend some time looking forward and get your take on what happens next. We assume Jose Bautista will not come back. Do you assume that?
I assume that. Yeah, I think that's probably the case.
You think they'll offer him a qualifying offer? It's $17.2 million. And in all likelihood, Jose will say no. Not definitively, but in all likelihood.
In all likelihood, he just turned 36. What, yesterday? He turned 36.
Yep.
And, you know, he had a pretty good year when you really consider. I mean, he didn't hit for an average, obviously. And no. He was coming back. The six-week layoff really took a lot out of his season because it took him a while to get his timing back. And, you know, he hit 20 home runs and drove in over 60 runs, and he had another really productive year. But, you know, are you going to put that money into him as a free agent at 36 years old? I think you can make him a qualifying offer, and I think there are teams that will sign Jose Bautista.
What if he takes the qualifying offer?
Well, that's the risk you take.
Yeah, but I think that's okay. I'd be okay with that, wouldn't you?
You know what? I think, too, that would be fine. I mean, obviously, he's revered here and should be. He's a two-time home run champ. He's had a tremendous career here. And, you know, if he can stay healthy a full season, you know, he's liable to hit 30 home runs again. And if you do that for qualifying offer, then you have a guy. And I think with Edwin, you know, they got to do whatever they can to sign Edwin.
I agree, but here's what I think.
Okay.
Somebody is going to ridiculously overpay Edwin Encarnacion.
All he has to do, all his agent has to do
now that he can is play
say,
first base.
Jason Hayward. Mm-hmm. That's all I was going to say. Jason Hayward made $180 million.
Yeah.
And Edwin hit 42 home runs, plays first base, can play in the National League. I thought that was a stroke of genius, and I don't know how it came about, but Edwin playing first base, and he plays very well.
He's not just a DH.
He's an above-average first baseman.
He added 13 teams to his neg list this year.
Absolutely. Now, he's a very, very highly regarded commodity. And, you know, I don't know. I just spoke to him an hour ago. He was in the clubhouse, and I spoke to him. And, you know, he was very reflective. He said, I would like to stay here. I mean, he's told everybody that. But, you know, when you get – you know, there's going to be a Jeff from Jacksonville somewhere that's going to make this great offer to him. It's going to be ridiculous. You know, he's going to have an owner that says, hey, we need this guy.
And then somebody will overpay him.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, they overpaid for Jason Hayward. Yeah. And if you're going to overpay for Jason Hayward, you're certainly going to overpay for Edwin. First class person, model citizen, doesn't need attention, likes to perform, comes to work every day. He didn't have any spring training this year and hit 42 home runs and drove in 127. Yeah, he's a first-class candidate. I would say he's going to be one of the guys, and it's a matter of fit. You know, where's he going to fit?
So how high would you go, though, if you're the Blue Jays?
If you're the Blue Jays, well, there's a lot of money coming off the books, obviously. There's $12 million coming off with RA, and Bautista's, what, 12?
14.
14. And, you know, Saunders. Then you've got Saunders.
And then Edwin's at 10 now, I think.
What's that?
Edwin's at 10 now, isn't he?
He's about 10, yeah. But, you know what, there's things that you can predict. Edwin fits here. Edwin likes it here. Edwin's comfortable here. You know what you're going to get from Edwin. That's worth something. And you know what? When you bring other people in this atmosphere, you don't know what it's going to be.
But again,
Toronto is a unusual market, obviously. We know what it is. We know how special it is. But there are people that won't fit here.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody disagrees that they should try to.
Right.
But what number makes
when
sense?
When you get this close to free agency, you get one kick at the can.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you roll the dice?
Sure.
Yeah. You're liable to hit the jackpot. And you know what? I mean, obviously, he's financially secure for the rest of his life already. But, boy, you talk about hitting a gold mine. And Damien, you say, what price?
What number? And how many? Well, actually, let's back off that for a minute. Let's back off the number.
That's the key.
How many years?
Yeah.
Are you willing to pay Edwin?
I know what you'd want. You'd want to give him 3 plus an option. I think the Blue Jay organization would be comfortable at 3 plus 1.
Yeah. I mean, we all know that the 7-year and 10-year and 8-year contracts don't work, and they especially don't work when you're 33 years old. But I would pay him $30 million a year for 3 years.
I was going to say, would you pay him $30 million? I mean, we all know
it's more than me, but
it wasn't that long ago.
You may need to pay him that much.
Sure. But it's going to cost you. Yeah. But you think about it. I mean, it doesn't concern this regime, but when you think about it, you've gotten more than what you paid him for the last 3 years.
Way
no question about that.
Yeah,
doesn't impact in your negotiations.
Remember Vernon Wells.
Yeah.
It can become such a negative when a guy is targeted as making too much money and not being able to hit that number anymore. And it becomes such a negative for everybody on the team. We see it in all sports.
But I don't think that would be the case with Edwin. I think Edwin is going to produce because he has the ability to be the DH. And I think he likes being a DH. I know he loves it here. He's revered by his teammates. He's a model citizen.
In the absence of a deal, though.
Yes.
He's my starting first baseman next year.
Yes.
I mean.
And you can use the other position to rotate. What, you know, and this is a big puzzle, obviously. We all know that's puzzle. What they need is a power hitting left-handed hitter.
Yes, sir.
A corner outfielder, preferably. What they need is a leadoff hitter.
Yes.
Devin Travis.
Preferably a left-handed hitter.
A left-handed leadoff hitter that can fly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You need speed.
So just go get one of those.
The game is athletic.
Where do you get those again?
The game is athletic now. Since we have reduced the impact of PEDs,
yep.
You look at the teams that Lindor's 22, Ramirez is 23, Bogarts is 24, Betts is 24, Seager and Correa, and there's 22, 23-year-old stars. All over the place. And you got to have a few of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Rowdy Tellez is the next guy on the horizon. He's a power-hitting, left-handed hitting first baseman. And he's down in Dominican right now playing. And he's got a chance to be a legitimate first baseman that can hit with power.
2 years away?
Year and a half. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he might even make it next year by the end of August.
Hmm.
He's got a real good chance to play. So, you know, it's a big puzzle, and you know there's a lot of needs on this team. Obviously, what's the strength?
Strengths are starting pitching.
No question about it. You got your rotations in line now. You've got Connor Green coming, Sean Reed Foley coming, John Harris coming. You've got more guys in the pipeline.
Well, I was going to say, do they have enough strength in the rotation
to make trades
to use a piece of that to get that leadoff hitter?
Well, they could,
or that left-handed power hitter.
One, I think,
absolutely.
I think they could move one.
Yeah.
And the consensus is if, you know, it depends on who somebody wants.
Depends on what you get back.
Yeah. You know? You were going to say Stroman, though, weren't you?
I was. And it's not that I dislike Marcus Stroman. I like him plenty.
He's got a lot of upside. He's young. He's established. He's a
pitched
major leaguer.
Well,
he's pitched well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He's everything
you
want.
2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Pitched very well.
And he has the star quality, and he's everything. Yeah. I mean, he's valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, I you know, obviously the guy you're not going to trade is Sanchez.
Not even in a dream.
No.
What about Estrada?
That's
everybody loves Marco Estrada.
Marco's been terrific.
And
you know what? I mean, when you think
he's a little
scare you in terms of the long term viability of being able to do what he does?
No, because he doesn't do anything exceptional except command the changeup.
Right,
and that's an easy thing to do. And it was interesting, you know, he made a comment to me as I was saying goodbye last night, and he was going, well, next year I'll be healthy all year.
Mm.
So, you know, as well as he pitched, he was still dealing with that back issue all the time.
But he's got a herniated disc, so does he need
surgery? Do you know?
I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a doctor.
Oh, I thought you
were. You knew that.
You knew
that.
I thought he did at one point. I just forgot.
That changes everything.
But, yeah, you know what? And, you know, Jay Happ, I think Jay Happ could have another season just like he did this year. I'm telling you what, he was terrific.
So
and,
let me
and
ask.
He's a lefty. So, you're,
so let me
he's
ask you this.
So you got Liriano and you got Happ. And, you know, Liriano showed signs of really coming out and being.
Well, you want him in the starting rotation.
Absolutely. He's in the
starting rotation. But the only thing I would say just before we move on from that is, the one thing about the rotation, except for Estrada, they were remarkably healthy this year.
Well, that was the big break. Seven
you
know, pitchers.
Whereas you trade one guy and all of a sudden next year it's July and you got two starters and you go, what do we got now?
Let's go back and give the Blue Jays credit for that because everybody in the world criticized them for the six-man rotation.
Yeah.
But had they not made the trade to get Liriano that allowed him to go to six men, they couldn't have done it. They got Sanchez through a full season. He threw as well at the end as he did at the beginning and never showed any signs of...
Well, be careful, because when they got Liriano,
Buck, why would you
they were not going to a six-man rotation. Sanchez was going to the bullpen.
No, he wasn't.
Yo, he was.
No, he wasn't.
I'm telling you, the president of the ball club sat in that very chair in this studio and told me he's going to the bullpen, and they had a five-man rotation, and then they talked to Martin and a few other guys before the Blue Jays went down to Houston and started to have second thoughts about it. And then Atkins got on an airplane, flew down to Houston, talked to Gibby, talked to Martin again, talked to Sanchez again, and they talked him into leaving him in the rotation in a six-man rotation.
Right. That's so, I agree with you. That was the case.
That's what happened.
Yeah. But I applaud Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins for their ability to trust what they were seeing.
Agreed.
And not what was on the stat sheet.
Agreed.
They saw he was recovering. And this is one thing that Ross said all year. We're going to watch his bullpens. We're going to watch his recovery. We're going to watch his treatment. We're going to watch his side sessions. If anything changes, then we're going to put up the stop sign. But nothing changed.
And by the way, are we done with all that now?
Yes.
We don't have to live with Aaron Sanchez.
He's going to be a Cy Young contender from here on out.
Boy, it's hard. I know there's great pitchers in baseball with a lot more cachet than and history than this kid, but I can't think of a guy I'd rather have.
Oh, you know what? He's 24 years old. You know, his knuckles scrape the ground when he walks to the mound. He's got exactly the perfect body you want for a starter, and he's got the mindset, and nothing bothers him.
Yep, he's a number one.
And when he left to go down to Dunedin, I was walking up the ramp with him at the ballpark.
When was this? When?
Huh?
When he went to Dunedin?
When they sent him back down to the minors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when they took him out to Austin.
Last year?
No, this year.
Oh, this year. Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah.
They sent him out in August, and then they gave him 15 days off.
Gotcha.
I said, are you cool with this? He goes, all I want to do is pitch in the postseason, and if that's what this does, I'm cool with it. So he's had nothing but the positive mindset as a result of the meeting in Houston. I'll grant you that. That was the result. But he said it all along.
Oh, yeah, he said, let me pitch.
And I said it all along.
So did I.
The first time I ever saw the kid, I said, this is a starter.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, I'll go back 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
3 years ago
when he came up to Montreal.
No, in Montreal. I saw him in Dunedin.
Well, I saw him in Dunedin, too. But in Montreal, he came up and struck out the side against the Mets. And I walked into the clubhouse, and he and I had been talking all spring. He was tucking in his shirt into his pants, getting ready to go to Double A. He looked across the room and he went,
"Give me a wink."
That's all was said.
Yeah.
So he's pretty special.
It does, and I know you can't go back and change history, but boy, it does make you think some days. Imagine if they'd kept Syndergaard, what they'd have. But you don't, and they made their move, and they made their move at the time. But imagine if you had a Sanchez Syndergaard.
Nicolino Di Sclafani, and Danny Echevarria.
I mean, that goes, I mean, and not to, you can't go
you
back,
can't go back and change history. But
that does change history.
But you see, that's the backbone of winning. The homegrown athletes.
Right.
You have to have homegrown athletes.
Currency.
Because, not currency, they're players. Not currency. But you cannot win in this era unless the core of your team is homegrown because they play for each other. When you start bringing in mercenaries from here and there and everything else, they're concerned about the 1st and the 15th. When you have a core of homegrown players, they're concerned about playing for the Toronto Blue Jays. And they will fight for one another because they grew up together.
The only thing I say to that, and I take your point, but you look at this Blue Jay team, and they are mostly not homegrown players, and they played for each other pretty hard, didn't they?
They did. But I will say that given the length of time they were here, Bautista and Encarnacion were theoretically homegrown players because they blossomed as players here.
Okay.
And then the Pilar.
Stroman.
Osuna. Sanchez. The core.
No,
and you don't need many.
Right.
But
I think we'd all agree if the Syndergaard thing was a bad
absolutely.
Thing, getting those two guys for nothing
made
this team. Like two, and you can't go out and get guys like that. Although maybe they, maybe you do. Maybe that happens.
But, now if you bring up Urania and Telez and Connor Green and Sean Reed Foley, and then you've got a pipeline year in and year out, I think when I talked to Torrey in the 90s when he was, you know, winning all those championships, the one thing Joe said, I said, how do you maintain this consistency? He said, you bring in new people every year that haven't experienced it. I talked to Bobby Cox and John Schuerholz about the Braves. He says, how do you win this many times in a row? He said, you have a constant feeder of homegrown talent.
One or two guys a year.
Every year.
That's all you need.
Because it reminds the veteran players what you're playing for and how special it is. Mm. And look at the impact Lindor's had on the Cleveland Indians since he came up last year. His smile, his energy, his enthusiasm. It reminds everybody how much fun it is to play the game.
Even the kid they trotted out last night.
How about that?
Yeah.
You know what Terry said, and I'm sure you heard it. Terry said, these guys embrace everybody on this team so nobody feels like they have to overperform what they're capable of doing. And Napoli has a lot to do with that. Coco Crisp has a lot to do with that. You know, you have to applaud the Indians for what they did. You know, they identified Napoli. And I talked to Mike during the series. And I said, isn't it unusual how you're on all of these championship teams? And he kind of smiled. But, yeah, I mean, it's character, you know. I mean, it used to be Don Baylor. And then Johnny Gomes had a run, and now it's Mike Napoli. So if you want to go to the postseason next year, sign Mike Napoli.
All right. So one of the yeah, one of the things
they had him once.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah,
for about over 5 minutes. Yeah,
yeah.
One of the things we talked about was the possibility of trading the starting pitcher, and I think we all kind of were on the same page that if push came to shove and you had to do something, Stroman might be the guy you'd be willing, in the right circumstance, to move. What would you do with Osuna? Osuna is a guy who was a starter, has had Tommy John, came to the Blue Jays. You remember as well as I do that year he went to camp as a 20-year-old or 19-year-old. And who was that other big Castro.
Miguel Castro was actually the closer before Osuna.
Yeah. And the two of them were just lights out.
Yep.
And these were guys that were going to probably go to Double A.
Right.
Not even to Triple A. And they won jobs in spring training.
Right.
Now, Osuna, both as relief pitchers. Not uncommon for the Blue Jays to take relief pitchers or starters, convert them to relief pitchers for a short period of time in the early part of their career, and then lengthen them out. And there's a long list. Jimmy Keep, Todd Stottlemyre,
Pat
Hankin,
David Wells. Leiter.
All those guys. Mm-hmm. All those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Is Osuna that guy?
No.
Why?
Because he is so good at what he does, and he relishes that. And you don't find that often.
Okay. So let me give you a scenario.
Okay.
You can go out and get, and I know you can't, but, well, wait a sec. There's a very hard-throwing relief pitcher that I believe is a free agent this year, if I'm not mistaken. What the heck is that guy's name, the guy who throws 103 miles an hour? Yeah, Chapman.
Yeah.
If you could get him, does that change your position on Osuna?
No, because I think you have more pressing needs than him.
If you deal Stroman, I'm trying to give you the scenario here. If you deal Stroman and you need a starting pitcher and you don't have any in the system right now that are ready to come.
Joe Biagini.
Yeah, that was, what about Biagini?
All right.
Okay. He's a starter. Right. He's a monster of a man physically. He's got all the weapons.
Four pitches, right?
He's got four pitches. He has a knack for learning. He picked up that changeup. He drives the ball down in the zone. He is knocking on the door to be a starter. That's okay. Their insurance policy.
All right, I'll buy that.
Yeah.
And there's another guy.
Connor Green, Sean Reed Foley.
They're coming.
Connor Green's, in my mind, Aaron Sanchez.
So how close
we
are
we saw him
kids?
In the spring. He was pretty good, even in the spring.
Yeah, and he's had a couple setbacks. You know, he's a Southern California kid that's got a pretty high impression of himself.
Yeah.
And he'll figure it out. But what an athlete. My God, I saw him do a running backflip in the middle of the outfield down in spring training. Mm-hmm. I go, who is that? That's Connor Green. That's the kind of athlete.
So how close is he?
He'll start in AAA next year and, you know.
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Maybe sometime next year if they need him.
And then Sean Reed Foley's going to come quickly, too. And so
but
it's,
you never know
Sean
with pitchers.
Harris.
That's
not. No, you never
thing.
Know. I mean, one bad pitch.
Talking about Castro.
Boom. Yeah.
You know
Castro. Castro evidently told people, you know, he was a little concerned about pitching in the big leagues. He doesn't sure if he could do it. Well, Osuna knows he can pitch in the big leagues, and he can pitch every, you know, I think he relishes that position. I mean, he's 21 years old.
I wonder if one of the other pressing needs, and this is not to be critical of Russell Martin, but to give him some help.
You need a number two catcher right away.
Behind Russell to give him a break.
Yeah.
Russell was beat up.
They just ran him into the ground.
Is Navarro the guy?
No.
Okay.
You need a younger, more athletic guy. I think.
I agree.
You need an athlete there that can catch nine innings. Give him a day off. Give him 2 days off a week. That's the key to putting this team together, too, to save your DH spot so you can rotate your regular players into that spot.
Was that part of their idea when they picked up Montero? Hope, wonder, maybe this guy might be able to be that guy again? Or is that
no, he's not a catcher anymore.
So have they got anybody in the system?
The catcher they got from Pittsburgh, McGuire. Yeah. He got hurt in the outfielder, got hurt after one game. You know, they got those two guys, they sent him to New Hampshire, and they got hits in their first game, and then they didn't play much. But I think McGuire's got a chance to be a pretty good player. And you know what? You bring him up, you let him back up, you let him learn the big leagues, and then you just morph into more catching. And, you know, in a few years. When
catching is such an interesting position, as you would attest, because experience is probably more valuable to a catcher than almost any other position player. Having said that, how do you feel about bringing up a kid maybe a little early as a number two catcher, understanding he's going to catch once every 4 or 5 days? Does that make some sense to you?
Yes, it does. And I'll tell you why. Because he's going to learn how to catch big league pitching.
Yes.
Because the gap between AAA and the major leagues has never been wider. And he's not going to learn how to catch major league pitching in the minor leagues.
Yeah. Even if he only plays once every 5 days?
I think so. It just depends on who he is, obviously.
Right.
I mean, everybody's going to be different. You can have a guy sitting. If he's doing all the right things and learning how to catch at the same time, you just give him a couple starts a week. Russell goes into the DH spot. You know, you got to keep Russell's bat in the lineup.
Would you send that kid out to the bullpen to catch as well, just for the experience of that?
Sure. It depends on – I mean, it has to be an organizational – concession to say this is our best approach. I mean, ideally, you know, there are a handful of backup catchers, and you know what, and the kid Perez can really catch. And I think he's going to hit too, but you know, everybody criticized his batting average. Well, he got called up after 20 rehab at bats because Yan Gomes got hurt.
Yeah,
but he can really catch. He's as quiet as anybody I've seen when he receives the ball. His body moves, but his glove never moves. So he'll move, get into position to make a catch, and he's got a strong arm. And, you know, here's another Puerto Rican catcher. You know, they're consistently coming up with great catchers, but he can catch, and I think he's going to hit, too.
Is Russell Martin the kind of guy who will work with a young guy in that way?
Because
not everybody can. Everybody wants to.
Not everybody can pass along information, either.
Yeah, yeah,
A lot of guys don't know how they do it.
So would you see him as an ideal guy in that regard?
I think so. I think Russell's a terrific teammate. I think, you know, he's obviously had a phenomenal career. He's financially secure for the rest of his life. And, yeah, I think that would work. But it's hard to identify those guys. You know, I've not seen the McGuire kid catch it all. But from what I heard from other players saying, he's pretty special. So, you know, he's 21 or 22. He's very young. I mean, obviously, you don't want him to come up now, but he plays in AAA. You see how he does, and, you know, catching's hard to find, man.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hard to find. And you know what? You just have to really have somebody that's all in mentally. This is what I'm going to do. I mean, you know, and the Pat Borders story is a great example. You know, they finally told him, Pat, you're not going to make it as a third baseman. You just can't play. He said, well, how about if I'm a catcher? And he made up his mind he was going to make himself a catcher. And there you go.
He goes to the World Series.
But it's all mental. It's hard work. And you know what? You guys have been around kids. You know, kids want to play shortstop. They want to pitch. Nobody wants to catch. It's not a glamorous position.
No.
But I told a youngster the other day, I saw him in Cleveland. It was a friend of Steve Grilly's. And we talked about it. And he's 13 or 14. I said, learn how to switch hit and learn how to catch. And you'll write your own ticket. You go to college wherever you want to go. You'll do whatever you want to do. And when time comes to play baseball, they'll say.
My kid wanted to catch. Unfortunately, he throws left-handed. That was a bit of a problem.
It is slightly problematic.
But we do have a right-handed catcher mitt in the house.
Yeah.
Last one. We have talked a lot about – well, we talked about Edwin Encarnacion and at his age, how long do you sign him for? And Jose Bautista, at his age, how long do you sign him for? Joey Votto's name keeps coming up over and over and over again. He is the type of player I think the Blue Jays absolutely could use. But he has a long-term deal that will pay him, I think, until he's 41 years of age.
Wow.
He's 33 now.
Who's his agent?
Not me.
I want to call him up.
That's all I care about. He makes a wackadoo and probably won't be able to produce in the last few years of his contract. But if he – and he has a – he's 5 and 10, 10 and 5.
Yeah, yeah. He has to approve
it. He has to approve it. no idea whether he would or wouldn't.
Right.
But what's your thought on Joey Votto?
Yeah, you know, when I initially, you know, I know Joey, you know, I know there was some concern that he didn't want to play in Toronto, but I think
that may have
softened.
Changed.
Yeah, I think that has softened. I mean, given what
he's they're
seen,
going through and what he's seen here.
Yeah. If it's Cincinnati or Toronto, maybe I'll...
You know what, and I know it's difficult for a player to play in your hometown with family and friends and expectations and all of that, but I think Joey's beyond that now. You know, he's had so much success and he's had such a great career. It would be...
Would you pursue him?
Yeah, I would. But, you know, there are a lot of other people around that are kind of interesting fits. You know, I mean, I don't have any insight. I mean, it's just me as a baseball guy looking around saying, Charlie Blackmon would be an interesting guy. Gets a lot of hits, gets on base a lot. Christian Yelich would be an interesting guy. It looks like he's going to develop into a real fine player and a young player. Cole Calhoun's an interesting guy. Mm. I mean, there are a lot of interesting guys out there, and you have to do some investigation to see what it's going to cost you, how they would fit. And I think that's an important thing. I mean, you know, this window is, you got Tulo and Russell and, you know, some younger guys that you're going to have for a while. So it's an interesting window.
And when it gets to the postseason, we go through this every year. You can look at this Toronto Blue Jay team and say they need this and this. What about the 20-something who didn't make it this far?
Right. They got bigger lists.
They got bigger lists, and they're willing to do stuff to try to get what, you know.
They can be creative,
Yeah.
And when you have success like the Blue Jays, people are going to call you. Would you move this guy?
We know
you've got, you know, they're going to call you. So that's the interesting part of it. Hey, we know you're going to lose this guy. We got this guy that can replace him. And they might offer you something you had no idea about. You know, everybody knows there's a chance Jose and Edwin are going to move. Well, somebody's going to say, well, this guy would really fill the void. I'm going to call up the Blue Jays.
Well, and they also, I mean, they're front of mind. There's 28 teams that have been sitting in front of their television sets watching the Blue Jays.
And trying to figure out how that guy might fit into my team or how I have a player that I need to move that will fill the void of losing those guys. Uh-huh. So you don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, but there are going to be some interesting conversations, and the Blue Jays will get some calls on a lot of people.
The only chagrin I had about this year is we didn't get a golf game in.
Yeah.
So let's try and do that next year, okay?
We'll do that. For sure.
We're going to make a plan of it.
All right.
Buck had a book released earlier this year, which I have in my library and have read. It is an excellent read.
Thank you.
It's called Change Up.
It was fun.
Yeah. You going to do another one?
No. No.
I thought maybe slider would be next.
Slider, change up, slider.
A curveball.
Fastball.
You do a whole long.
Stay
in the game a little bit longer, and maybe there's another book in you. You never know. Great Buck Martinez with us, the voice of the Blue Jays, and you'll be able to catch him on Sportsnet doing the World Series. We only know half the participants. We'll know the other half within a few days. That's Buck Martinez. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Glenn Healy is next when Primetime continues. In a moment.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Bob McCown, Damien Cox on Primetime. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk show, 19 minutes before the hour. Dan Shulman, Richard Deitch, Don Banks, all in the next hour.
I was impressed by...
It's regulars day today.
By the fact that you decided, we're not going to talk, we're done, that season's over, let's move on. Because at a certain point, it is just over, and I think... One of the really great benefits about having the Toronto Blue Jays now be a team that plays meaningful baseball in August, September, October is that the off season becomes nearly as interesting as the season.
Oh, it becomes a 12-month year, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've got a team that's middle of the pack, it's really hard to generate that kind of enthusiasm.
I know.
Because by August, you're not even barely watching the games anymore. That part of it's fun.
Glenn Healy is our NHL analyst, easy for me to say, and joins us on the telephone. Hello, Heels. How are you?
Great, chat there, guys. I was listening intently. The Jays had this city the palm of their hand. I mean, yesterday the patios and the restaurants and just alive. It's just not that way this morning, though, is it?
No, but I mean, it you know, the baseball season is, as Damian said, is intriguing when you got a decent team, because I mean, we spent 25 minutes with Buck Martinez talking about next year.
Yeah.
Already, we're less than 24 hours away from or past last year, and well, you can do that, and it becomes intriguing because you got something to build on. It's not a rebuild; it's a tweak here and there.
And yet, there was a whole group of people that I was with yesterday that were totally intrigued at watching the Leaf game.
Yep.
Over the baseball game, which tells you
got to get new friends then.
There's some excitement about that club as well.
Well, let's talk about it. I mean, Austin Matthews is in a horrible slump. Scored 4 goals in his first game and hasn't got any since.
Done nothing. You know, it's like a week now.
Yeah.
Like, 10 attempts at the net yesterday, 7 shots.
Yeah. Had a breakaway in overtime, Heels. He could have won the game.
Yeah,
for
you got to put some of those away. You know, I mean, and then that Line A kid, who I think most Toronto fans basically ignored. Well, he's in Winnipeg, and he wasn't the number one pick. He was number two. Puts on a show last night, and he's pretty good too, huh?
Well, you know, when I played in the league, you would take warm-up and you'd look at every player's stick on the other team. You'd look at guys who had changed the color of their tape from black to white. You'd said, okay, this guy's struggling. He's changing something up. So I know he's in a world of hurt and probably he's going to shoot every time he gets the puck to get some confidence back, because that's what goal scorers like. But you'd also look at curves to see which guys were the pure shooters. And when I see this kid's stick from the end of my couch, and he's in Winnipeg, and I'm looking at that curve, I'm thinking, shoot first every single time, because the release, the ability to pick corners, it's exceptional for that young man.
Mm.
And the curve on his stick, it's got shooter written all over it.
Well, as I've said on many occasions, you can't teach touch.
Yeah, and you know, the other part of it too is, you know, as players come in the league, you get a book on guys. You had a book on Brett Hull. You had a book on Steve Yzerman. You have a book on, believe it or not, on Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, not that it did you any good, but
But I kept him in the league a long time.
Yep, you did.
And this kid, there's no book on yet, but he's starting to write a lot of chapters real quick.
Well,
and so when he had that 2-on-1 last night, where you know next week you might think he might pass. No, he's shooting, and for the most part, he likes the top part of the net.
Well, and I mean, you tell me on that goal or any of the others, when Austin Matthews scored 4 goals in his first game, I don't think the Ottawa Senators were thrilled with Craig Anderson's night. And Frederick Anderson, boy, I don't know what you're seeing right now, Heels, but
he's had 2 dogs.
He's struggling. Now, he was hurt in the postseason, so you've got to write that into it. And he's getting used to a new team. He's got a young defense in front of him. I get all that. But he sure seems to be having trouble.
Yeah, you know, you look at the past 2 seasons, he had only given up 5 or more goals twice in each of those years. So we were early in this one, and it seems to be happening relatively quick. He's filling up the calendar fast. You know, when you get injured and when you're a goaltender who, you know, goalies today, what you see isn't what you get when you come down the wing. You come down the wing, you see 5 hole, you see nothing upstairs on these 6'4", 5'6" monsters. But as you release the puck, most goaltenders spend the time on their knees. And if the timing's not right for a goaltender like Anderson, then he's down before he should be. And not having a full training camp, not playing games, not being battled ready for this early season, and having a young team in front of him, let's face it, this is an incredibly young team that he's got to play behind. The timing's not right, and then he's getting beat with too much regularity. But I do have faith in him as a goaltender. I mean, he had a couple exceptional years, and most people think Anaheim kept the wrong goaltender. He should have been the guy that they kept. And the contract gets into it, too. But I think, you know, we have to put it all in perspective. He was 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. If the Leafs were going to get him, they're going to have to pay him term. And they did. They paid him term. They know he's a stubborn guy because he was drafted by Carolina and told them to beat it. So when you put your back up against the wall and he said, this is my contract demands, they met him. But I think as the team gets better and he gets a little bit more under his belt with games, his timing gets better, you're going to see the goaltender that they believe they were getting.
Speaking of goaltenders, Matt Murray gets a 3-year contract extension in Pittsburgh. And, of course, that immediately fuels speculation about the possible trade of Marc-Andre Fleury. Do you believe he'll be dealt?
Yeah, I do. I think he's had his best days there. When they handed the reins off to Murray in the playoffs, it was pretty clear that he's our go-to guy. And he delivered, brought him a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
It is ironic, though, like that team, Marc-Andre Fleury, was the best player on Pittsburgh last year mm-hmm. during the regular season.
100%.
The best player. And yet, just with circumstances, age, contracts, expansion, someone's got to go. And I have no doubt that it's going to be Marc-Andre. Now, he's a great kid. Probably last year's playoffs hurt him more than anything because he's got a lot of pride. But, you know, you can only keep one. And if I'm looking at shedding some salary and keeping my youth, Murray is the answer.
Does Fleury make too much money to be a number two?
Yes, for sure. Now, there are certain teams that may want him as a number two to get to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, mm-hmm. if you're trying to get him because of his pedigree and because he's won a couple cups, it's because you're a competitive team and you're probably not at the floor, but you're more towards the ceiling. So it's a lot of money to spend on a guy to not play. Pittsburgh knows it. You wouldn't do that with any other position. There's a team in the world that would take that much money and just park it on the bench for a number two. So everything changes in this game, though. You know, there could be injuries tonight that are catastrophic. L.A. found that out. And then all of a sudden there comes a market for Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think what that market is right now versus what it could have been.
Well, the Montreal Canadiens sure had a market for him last year.
That's what I mean.
So yeah, it's
so you. I guess you just wait.
The season that started as great as it did, and finished worse than any in 100 years.
I guess what I'm saying is it's going to be difficult for them to get big returns on him, particularly with the likelihood that whatever team gets him could face a decision on either exposing him or somebody else in the expansion draft.
Oh yeah, that's right.
This is not an ideal situation, Heels, at this point, to be trading this player.
Yeah, and they know it, and they understand all the implications, and they also understand that when it comes to the expansion draft, and I was part of the expansion draft when it was Tampa Bay that came into the league and Anaheim into the league, and I was picked up by Anaheim. I was one of the first Mighty Ducks. I'm on the board in the dressing room, so never got a sweater, never met anybody there, but that didn't matter. But you're going to get nothing for this player when it comes to expansion draft if that's the guy that they choose to start their franchise with. And I would imagine he's at the top of their list right now with regards to who do we want to have a first, real good first year.
30 seconds here. John Shannon informed me earlier that I've been offered a contract to go and play goal for the LA Kings, who are desperate for a goaltender. I wouldn't take the pay cut. I don't know about you. How do you feel? Have you still got your pads? Are you all right?
That's where I started.
I know.
I still have my yellow sweater.
All right, so you could go. You could go.
I am ready to go. If you give me a week to lose 30 pounds, I'm all set. Yeah.
You're going to have something removed?
Give me a month.
a leg, your head, something.
Yeah, that's bad news for them. He is a key to their hockey club, and they're a club that, you know, what are their answers there? You know, there's a lot of teams tonight. They're looking for answers from some other guys. Toronto was looking for answers last night from their guy and didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, LA's looking for answers, and the team across the way there, Anaheim's still looking for answers, too.
Yeah.
We got to go. Time is our enemy. Heels, next week. See ya.
Stuff, boys. Cheers.
Glenn Healy, our NHL analyst. More baseball talk. Dan Schulman will join us from Sportsnet and ESPN. A little more Jays postmortem. A little bit more on the Dodgers and the Cubs series, reaction to the Cleveland Indians, and couldn't they go all the way? Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated on a whole variety of things, and then Don Banks, our NFL contributor, on the Bears and the Packers tonight in the Thursday Nighter. Back in a bit.